Welcome to Reality Check, a weekly podcast about education. I'm Jeannie Allen, founder and CEO of the Center for Education Reform, where we've been working for close to a quarter of a century to expand opportunity and innovation in American education. Reality Check is a production of National Review, and we hope you subscribe to Reality Check at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or TuneIn, so that every week you'll have the latest Reality Check with prominent guests and interesting conversations right on your computer. So we chose the name Reality Check because a lot of what you read about education in the news or hear from your local school is often wrong or misleading, and it's really important since, to me, it's the most fundamental building block of our nation to know what's going on in America's schools from pre-K to graduate school. So once again, I'm in New York City at National Review for this taping of Reality Check, and my guest in this episode is John Katzman. Someone who can help us provide a real reality check when it comes to a lot of issues, including higher ed. And he is what I'd call a serial entrepreneur. He has several specialties. Early in his career, he founded Princeton Review. In fact, Princeton is his alma mater. And he helped half of students applying to American colleges and universities each year find, get into, and pay for school, which is quite a feat. We should talk about cost, John. After more than two decades, he went on to found and run a company called 2U, which helped major universities around the country build high-quality online degree programs. Today, John heads Noodle Partners, which is a fascinating, I'd say maybe conglomerate, of partnerships and efforts to go beyond building online education programs, really transforming classroom education, and then also transforming data and how people access data from pre-K through lifelong learning. So, John, thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me, Jeannie.
We have so much to talk about, and I just want to first start with a little bit of history and background for our listeners. I have the privilege and pleasure of knowing you for a really long time. Why are you doing this? How did you backdoor into kind of education, entrepreneurship, and creating all these new ideas and companies?
Well, I started Princeton Review as just a fun way to make some money while thinking about starting a software company or doing something else. And the review took off, and I was great with that, and just at any moment had a 3 to 5 year plan to sell the company and move on, and somehow, two decades later, I was still running it. And it's only when I took it public and I realized I hate running a public company that I decided it was really, really time to leave and brought in professional management and went off to found 2U. But between Princeton Review and then 2U, I've spent now, 30 years kind of on the edges of education, right? Like I have a really interesting vantage point on both K-12 and higher ed because I'm not in there, but I work with the biggest school districts in the country. I work with some of the greatest universities. And at a pretty molecular level, like if I'm working with New York City schools, I got to know 50, 60 people by first name, close at every level from teacher through the chancellor. And you can see the disconnects. You can see where things are going wrong, and they're not all wrong by any means, because you're there, but you're not immersed. Mm-hmm. And I feel the same way about the growth of online education and the tools that we're using in every other part of our lives and how they are impacting higher ed. So the Noodle Companies has been an effort to say, we've got a real disconnect between learners and educators and technology, that the metrics of education, how we measure what is a good school, what's a good tutor, what's a good college, are terrible. Mm-hmm. The information, however bad it is, doesn't get in the hands of consumers. Mm-hmm. And that's true whether you're talking about schools and consumers and students. But it's also true when you're talking about schools and technologies. Which technologies do you use? Which curricula are better or worse for which kind of students? And so the Noodle Companies is an effort to connect things.
Make it your business to know and be able to help provide universities with that information so they don't have to go shopping on their own, right? Because all the time that takes.
It's more than shopping. In Noodle Partners, and there are four Noodle companies, but in Noodle Partners, the idea is – we've brought together, if you think about a Boeing, right? They make wings. Everything else, they design it, they spec it, they find the right subcontractors, they put the plane together. It is a Boeing plane. They're not simply a contractor. They are a manufacturer, but a modern manufacturer. Tesla makes batteries, but that's a Tesla car. And the thought here is putting together great online programs and then taking those technologies and transforming classroom programs and thinking through a really agile university. There are dozens. There are probably 50 vendors already that we're working closely with. Putting them together and building the software that's missing and the services that are missing and making it a coherent, beautiful plane that flies instead of a bucket of parts.
Great.
Is what we're doing.
And why online? So a lot of people, you know, conventionally every day go, oh, that sounds like really interesting. It's not for me. I remember when I first got into learning a lot about online higher education and being exposed to it, both working with it as well as doing it myself in my master's program, all sorts of mythology were like blown. Right? It actually, you're not sitting at a computer, right? You're actually finding new ways to engage with professors. So talk a little bit about, to people listening, about why that's so important. And does it, is it an access issue? Is it an educational improvement issue? What is it?
There are a lot of problems that online education, that technology can solve within higher ed. The first one is access, that especially once you're out of college, the cost, the opportunity cost of going, leaving your job, being on campus for full time for a year or two to get a master's, and then going back into the workforce is beyond the means of most people. The ability to work with those same professors, those same universities, get that same degree, but do it half-time while you pursue your life, you know, is a big deal to a lot of people. At this point, 30% of the students in professional master's programs, in master's programs period, are studying exclusively online. So this is the fastest growing part of education. It's growing at still, you know, 10, 12% a year. And so, you know, in a couple years, it'll be over half the people getting graduate degrees are getting them online. People think, well, when you're studying online, you're sitting in a basement someplace, right? Why would you do that instead of being on campus? And the answer is you have a life, you have a community, but it already exists. You also have a mortgage, a family, a job, and education's got to fit around that. And as the economy changes and as people change careers and change jobs more often, and the average millennial now will have 25 jobs according to the Labor Department, your ability to access education in a much more flexible way is going to be really, really important. So the model of just stopping everything to get a degree, I think, is probably dated.
And does this extend to undergrad? So, you know, there's lots of jokes about undergrad. It's in the news all the time also about debt. So there's, you know, there's sorrow, there's woe. There's jokes about, oh, it's just a great big place for kids to go party. We have some ridiculous number of students who start and finish. It's some 54% or something will actually finish in 4 years if that number still works. Does this extend to undergrad as well?
It does.
Can it help someone get through?
Well, first of all, the other problem that online education, that technology can solve is cost. People talk about cost disease, and they've been talking about it for, I don't know, 50 years, Bowen and Baumol. And the thinking behind it was education is going to get more expensive every year because at the root, the professor or teacher in K-12, in a room full of students, there's no productivity growth. And so everything else in the economy is getting more efficient at 2% a year. Mm-hmm. That construct hasn't changed in 2,000 years, and so education is just going to continue to get wildly expensive. The reality is that education has gotten wildly more expensive, but not the teaching part. Mm-hmm. The actual teaching is about 20% of what a school spends on a student, and the the question of where is all the other money going?
Right.
It's not going to the football team. It's not going to the lazy river or the climbing wall, right? They're all these kind of crazy. It's not going to dorms that are like palaces. When you really break it out, it's the services around the teaching
right.
that have wildly increased in scale. And it's because we're taking students in who we weren't taking
mm-hmm.
and they have more needs. It's
mm-hmm.
because of regulatory issues that schools are doing more. It's a lot of things. The solution to bringing back the cost of higher ed is scale. That with this infrastructure we have, the buildings, the research, the administration, if we can put 50 or 100% more students through without impairing the quality of the student-faculty
right.
relationship or the student-student relationship, and hopefully while enhancing it, we can take the cost of higher ed back by 25 to 50%.
It's amazing.
And that is a real driver of what we're trying to do.
And you mentioned these vendors before that you work with. So for people who are not accustomed to being part of this debate all the time, you're talking about things like HR, right? You're talking about delivery of a certain level of services. I mean, I keep meeting all these EdTech innovators who have some little slice of this that offer somewhere. You're pulling people together and saying, you don't need 20 people in the career office. You could have 5, and here's all of this data and library. I'm just making this up. I don't know if there's a company that exists like this. It just makes sense. Right? You have all this data access library to other information that those 5 can help use, or you can engage people online. They don't have to show up in person. You don't have to have the office structure for it. Talk a little bit like what are the possibilities, potential services that could be reduced by great technology and innovation?
Almost all of them. And again, technology in every other industry has lowered costs. In higher ed, it's actually raised costs to date. And just the evidence on that, if you look at undergraduate, one of the reasons that the published tuition has gone up so quickly, right? Certainly, reduction in state subsidies is part of the story.
Sure.
But another part of the story is price segmentation. Right, so 30 years ago, airlines discovered that they could charge you $500 for this seat, and the guy next to you $1,000, and the guy next to him $100. Right, and they've been doing that, you know, with increasing sophistication, while advertising their lowest cost seat. Whereas higher ed has found price segmentation. Right, the wealthy parents are paying a lot; the less advantaged parents are paying a little. But they're terrible marketers and they advertise their most expensive seat, right? They talk about published tuition. So the average discount rate in undergraduate is 50% for freshmen, 40% overall, right? If tuition is $40,000, the average student is paying, call it $24,000. If you look at graduate programs, the average discount rate is smaller. It is probably 25%, and we're still trying to get these numbers because they're not published in iPads and they're closely held. If you look at online programs where the cost structure is definitely lower, the average discount rate is like 3%. Somehow, technology is making higher ed more expensive, and discounts, tuition waivers, scholarships, smaller. And we can fix that. And just from doing nothing else but using technology the way it should be used, not touching the student-faculty relationship,
right.
but the 80% around it, you know, you can just on that alone take the cost of a graduate program down to the same kind of 25% discount that the on-campus students are getting.
Right.
Which would be a good start.
And this is common. I mean, you're talking about someone who could maybe get a master's in nursing sciences from Claremont, but they're sitting in New Jersey.
That's right. Now, I will say most students end up going, even online students, going to school within 100 miles of the campus, not because, I drive by it all the time and I like the brand. But because when you're taking a professional master's program, you're buying into a job network, right? So if I want to work in, I don't know, the video game industry in Seattle, right? I'm probably better going to UW than going to some school across the country. So that student could be sitting in New Jersey, but she's probably more likely sitting in California, Arizona, New Mexico,
right,
and Nevada. Because that's right, because that's where the job network is. That said, she's living her life. She's probably already a nurse, right? She's an RN or has a BSN. Mm-hmm. And now she's looking to upgrade her career.
Right.
She's taking the program probably half-time. Almost all online students are half-time for this reason. And not taking off the summer. So she's taking 3 semesters a year. So within about 18 months, you have learned those skills and now have a degree from one of the best schools in the country. And so far, the indications are that you're going to get a better job and commensurate with what you would get on campus or better. In fact, things like alumni giving, when you run an online program well, are higher than the on-campus program.
So this brings up a really interesting point. We're talking about graduate programs online. We're talking about how technology itself and even access to new technologies can help undergrad, can lower costs. And yet, there's not a day I feel like that doesn't go by when I'm in a professional setting that someone doesn't say, well, college isn't for everyone, right? And you kind of nod because you want to go, yeah, you're right, college isn't for everyone. And I have this challenge, John, because I want everyone to have that opportunity. They may choose not to use it. But we've been having discussions. We did at New York Ed Tech Week recently and in other university settings about just having the ability to expand your gray matter, right? Your ability to critically think, to argue, to engage in things that you might only get in a focused manner in higher ed. Is that true? Like, is there something that I'm missing? You know, you go back to the debate, Marco Rubio saying we don't need more philosophers, we need more plumbers. I was really unhappy with him that day. Right? I get it. There's 6.2 million jobs out there that are unfilled. Skills that don't have workers, workers don't have skills. I have supporters and friends and colleagues who would love nothing more than to send someone to a career and technical program because that'll help those people get a job. Those people. I'm just saying people in general who don't have a higher ed degree. No judgment there, seriously. But how do we crack this nut? I guess part of my compulsion about this is having gone to a really wonderful public high school in northern New Jersey where I watched friends of mine go to vocational school with very little choice. And they're fine today, by the way. They're rock stars. They were smart to begin with. And then some of them made a choice. But who decides? Is it true that college isn't for everyone? Will this make it accessible so everyone can kind of shop? There's a lot in that. I just think we're at a really important inflection point to help people make good choices today.
It's a moronic statement. I mean, of course, there are people who are impaired and education is just impossible. And that's a handful, right? A small percentage. For everybody else, you know, my gut answer is, yeah, it's for everybody but your kids. Because generally it is upper middle class white people talking about people of color who are disadvantaged. And you know, well, there are plenty of jobs for them. They can be my plumber. You know, and it's all of the data is that the gap between college educated and non-college educated is widening, not narrowing. There's nothing that actually suggests in the numbers that college is a bad idea for anybody. Could we do college better? Could we make it less expensive and not just how we share the cost between government and students, but actually bring down the cost? Can we make it more compelling? Can we tie it better to life outcomes as measured by Gallup, which include career but also includes just happiness,
right,
and
well-being?
And, yep. Absolutely. We should be focused always on every industry, you know, improving it, and every school is working to do that, and we can help them. But But it's generally a classist argument. It's not made in good faith.
It's interesting because you think about the book Hillbilly Elegy and a lot of rural America, where I know you and I are both working to help expand opportunity in K-12, hoping that maybe these students get access to better schools, more expansive, you know, better fit schools, differences, diversity. It's not about a district versus a charter per se, but to help them really get advance. And so you might take a group of people, a group of adults who have not been well served or have not felt they'd had access to the future, to working, and maybe there are career and technical programs that help them get to the next level. But those programs, to your point, could be part of a larger piece of higher ed.
They could be, and they could also, you know, provide a bridge that when you're ready, you know, we're talking very early stage conversations to some forces in the military, that the training you're doing as you proceed through your levels could be married to, if done artfully, to an undergraduate education that's flanking with higher order thinking skills the training you're getting.
Mm-hmm.
And so from the military's point of view, we're paying for it, we're going to raise retention and get better soldiers, right, who understand the context of the skills that they're learning. And from the soldier's point of view, gives them a much better set of skills.
So when they get out, they have something else to do.
To do,
and they're not trying to recreate, start a new career 10 years after having been completely, quote-unquote, removed from a career endeavor.
That's right. And if you think about that across vocational ed, if you think about the need to not just say you're going to be a plumber until the robots come for you,
mm-hmm.
you know, but you're going to learn these skills and then move on through an engineering degree to be able to work at a higher level if and when that makes sense.
So if you just fast forwarded and joined us, I'm talking to John Katzman, the founder and CEO of Noodle Partners, about higher ed, its worth, its value, the importance for everyone to have access. Here's a big question. I know this is being debated in lots of places. Let's say I'm a student. And I went to high school, I was college bound, for whatever reason I sputtered, right? Lots of them. It's not just, we used to think it was just people who didn't have access or affordability. It's lots of kids, including people with means. And so you sputter, you take some courses, you get back out into the workforce. Maybe you have a certificate course that work pays for, but essentially you're 25, 26, 30. You probably have, if someone gave you credit for it, a year and a half under your belt. Maybe your life experience count for something. Maybe you compose music. Who knows? There's so few places you can take that experience and show up and complete a degree so that you can improve your potential outcomes. So why is that? Like, why can't we? And you know, I'm in Washington, as you know, most of the time, and higher ed reauthorization is a big discussion. How much does government policy have to do with that? Why can't someone just give me, if I'm that student, here's your 2 years. The next 2 years are going to cost you X. You can do some online. You can do some at home. Requiring students to go back to school with a bunch of 18-year-olds when you're that age is ridiculous. So we have this huge gap with the millennials.
There's a lot packed in there. First of all, I've argued for a while that it would be great for starting with the government, but bringing in people like LinkedIn to speak not in terms of I've got a 2-year degree or a 4-year degree or I'm at this school, but the question at any given moment is what percent are you towards your AA or BA, right? I'm 64% complete on my bachelor's. In this major. And there are two reasons that if we frame it that way and describe at any moment where you are that way in the way the government works and then pushing for some key players. First of all, it gamifies higher ed, right? I'm more likely to finish when I can see that number creeping up. I'm also less likely to switch majors or switch schools when I realize just how far back that sets me on my percentages, right? I'm 64% and all of a sudden I decide to switch schools and I'm back to 47% because they're not accepting a bunch of credits. And people don't understand how expensive it is to switch. And, you know, there are policy answers to that. Most of those answers are wrong. The real answer is, as a consumer, as a student, that I have to own where I am in the process and make smart decisions. And if I have more visibility on doing that, I'll make better decisions. And ditto, as an employer, I'll make better decisions if I can see where you are.
Mm-hmm.
That said, a lot of the value of a college education, of a college degree, is that you completed it. You started something and you finished it. And so there is a value beyond just that extra percent, that extra course you took.
Right.
In a potential employer seeing you as somebody who finishes things. There's 60 million people who start a college in the U.S. and haven't finished it.
Amazing.
I think that's a huge area for online learning and working with various schools to come up with compelling programs for undergraduates that are degree completion.
Be a great goal for the U.S., right?
It's a great goal. It's, again, a very cost-effective way of doing it. You have a job, you have a life, and this can work around it and steadily bring you towards completion. And they're very targeted kinds of students, right? The students who finish their degrees, they know what they want to do. They are in education,
mm-hmm.
but they're teaching at a preschool because they have an AA, but they don't have a BA.
Right.
And getting them those extra courses leads them to a teaching certificate, leads them to a better job within education, or somebody who's in business and now wants a business degree.
Or someone who's in manufacturing and needs the extra skills to become the manager. Or perhaps they want to advance higher in that company or develop even into a different field. And what that opens up for you. And then it ties back to those open positions that we have in the country that should be filled because people could be leading more productive lives with them.
Right.
It's like what you're saying really is what they say is, you know, half the battle is just showing up. We know that about high school, just finishing high school. Yes, we want it to be good, rich, content-focused, meaningful. Showing up is half the battle. It's that grit, persistence that we talk about in so many areas.
Well, and we have an opportunity. You know, a lot of people who leave high school don't know why they're there. And the people who generally come back to college, when they do come back, they do know why they're there.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you just have to make it fit into their lives without undue expense. And with the proper support systems for somebody who might have forgotten a lot of things and needs to catch up. The notion, whether it's returning students or high school kids,
right.
The notion of a coherent on-ramp to higher ed, you know, people think, and it's sort of the common core kinds of thinking that you and I fight about all the time, that high school and college should be lined up, that they should fit together perfectly. When you finish high school, you're ready for college.
Right.
And it's nonsense because every high school is going to be somewhat different. Every teacher at a high school is going to teach some subset of the things that you thought were really important. Some student is going to learn some subset of that and then forget some part of that. So students are going to come out of high school at a variety of places. And if they're coming back after a while, they've probably forgotten more. And meanwhile, every college is different and every major in every college is different. What do we need you to walk in the door with to be successful here? And the gap between the two.
It's huge.
Sometimes it's nothing and sometimes it's huge, but it is always going to exist. And the notion that we can make the two of them line up perfectly, you know, is just fantasy. So respecting that gap.
Right,
but saying, how do we solve it?
Right, but information can help, right? So providing information, giving people access to why they're there, as you said, and what they should be looking for. Is just part of it.
Well, and a coherent analysis. Here's what you want to do. Here's a gap.
Right.
What's the cheapest, quickest way to get you through that? And then you're ready for college. Or then you're ready for that college.
It's fascinating. It's probably one of the most important topics today, particularly as all the baby boomers' kids are, you know, now raising their own families. John, this has been awesome. It's brief. We'll have to do it again. Thank you so much. John Katzman is the founder and CEO of Noodle Partners, one of America's most innovative higher education firms at the cutting edge of helping to build online degree programs. You've been listening to this edition of Reality Check, a production of National Review. And don't forget, you can always subscribe at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn. And please never miss an episode. I'm Jeannie Allen. I look forward to exploring and continue to explore the world of education policy in 2018 with all of you. Thanks so much for being here, John.
Thank you so much for having me.